Back to Basics archival page on the website. It's amazing, after all of the months that this has been on the web, the most asked question that we've ever received is, what model motorcycle did Bill and Lois ride in the 1920s as they made this sojourn around the country? And we did conduct the research, went to the Harley-Davidson archives, and found out that it was somewhere between 1919 1921 J-Series with a sidecar. That was their motorcycle. And during this session, we are going to talk about defects of character. This is a Back to Basics an original beginner's meeting conducted in Minneapolis by one of the gentlemen who was responsible for writing the Little Red Book. And what I wanted to mention is, where does Back to Basics fit today in terms of recovery? We are seeing a phenomenal success, but we've also seen an actual niche being carved within the community. Charlie P., who is doing Big Book Comes Alive all over the world, has been doing it for decades, did help us with Back to Basics, and I think he said it as clearly as anybody. The Big Book Comes Alive series was not originally designed for newcomers. It was something to be put on at roundups and conventions, and typically 1 to 5 years of sobriety were the people that were targeted for the Big Book Comes Alive. Now, I know a lot of people have taken their four-step inventories and the rest and have tried to take newcomers through based upon their format, but Charlie is absolutely totally supportive of Back to Basics, and the way he describes it is, Back to Basics is the elementary school of Alcoholics Anonymous, the kindergarten, so to speak. And Big Book Comes Alive is high school. But you have to get through elementary school before you can do the work in high school. You have to learn the basics. And that's why he is so supportive of our activities. There seems to be a natural fit between Back to Basics and Big Book Comes Alive. And we are targeting a different segment of the recovering community. And but we do see a lot of old-timers going through Back to Basics, and we do see a lot of newcomers going through Big Book Comes Alive. And I just want to let you know that there does seem to be a fit in terms of Back to Basics being the elementary course, the elementary school, and Big Book Comes Alive being the high school or the graduate course. Before we begin, I want to bring up two people. These are the gentlemen who had difficulty getting up here because of automobile problems. But Mike ended up changing a man's life on the way. Here he is in a wreck. His car's totaled. And I want to bring Mike T. up from Philadelphia to explain briefly what happened when he had to explain the situation. No, he actually got a speeding ticket coming up here. Yeah, that's what I want, almost. And I wanted to explain the speeding ticket.
He almost got a ticket.
Almost. This is Mike.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
I'm glad to be here. I just want to give you a brief scenario of what happened. We were coming out of Philadelphia into New Jersey on Route 95. And as we came into New Jersey, you know, we're anxious to get up here, and we're not paying attention to the speed we were going. You know. Okay, all right, all right. So we're doing 74 miles an hour, all right, and we get pulled over by a New Jersey state trooper. Big guy gets out of the car, and he walks up to the car, and he says, "License, registration." I said, "I'm sorry, officer. We were looking for Route 31. We were really confused, you know." He says, "What's going on? Where are you going?" I said, "We're going to Vermont. We're going to Bill Wilson's house, you know." So not even thinking. I was nervous. So he walks back to the car. And he comes back to the car, and he hands me my license and registration and a warning. And he goes, "It's your lucky day. I, too, am a friend of Bill W.'s." So we get out of the car and we walk back. I says, I have something for you. I have something for you. So we go to the rear of the car and I open up the trunk and I give him a Back to Basics tape that we recorded down in Philly last week. And I say, here. And he goes, I can't take that. I says, yes, you can. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go start a meeting.
Go start a meeting.
A year and a half sober, and he's off to start the Back to Basics in New Jersey. And southern New Jersey, doesn't it?
Great, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Wow. That's great. And that's Mike T., who has been instrumental on getting Back to Basics up and running in Philadelphia. Very successful, very successful. And Joey's from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and he wants to just share for a minute the directions on how to get to the Wilson House.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Joey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joey.
Hey, Joe.
Mike's my uncle, and I flew up from South Carolina to go to Philly and come up here to see all this and come back to basics in Philadelphia. The other day, we have a thing we're doing at the last minute. So I told Mike, do a computer readout on how to get there on a map thing. I'm a real ignorant computer. Mike laid it out and just handed it to me and got back to his work. And not knowing, we're riding up, and I'm taking directions, I-95 to I-31 in Jersey, this and that. And then I looked and I seen directions, 1, 2, 3, and directions were 12 steps. How to get there. And 12 steps, and I noticed the word directions, 12 steps, and I looked at Mike. And then where we got in the accident was Troy. It was around the 10th number. So I says, Mike, it's time to clear up the wreckage, and let's continue to drive. Thank you very much.
So they left the wreckage of the past in Troy, New York. Thank you, guys. The wreckage is in Troy. On the 10th step.
We are about to take our second journey back to the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. Back to the 4 1-hour beginners meetings of the mid-1940s. During this session, we will complete the surrender process we started last week. In addition, we will learn how to eliminate those parts of our character that have prevented us from establishing an intimate, two-way communication with the God of our understanding. Welcome to the session number 2 of the Alcoholics Anonymous Beginners Meetings. Together we are taking the 12 steps based on the directions found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the personal experiences of our AA pioneers. Our names are Steve and Wally, and we are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are grateful our AA group has asked us to lead these sessions. This is one way we can be of service to others and at the same time grow in the fellowship of the Spirit. Our goal is to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body known as alcoholism. And recover we will. The August 1946 AA Grapevine contains an article titled, Minneapolis Record Indicates That 75% Are Successful in AA. The article demonstrates what can happen when newcomers attend the article. The article demonstrates what can happen when newcomers attend beginners meetings and then return to help others through the steps. If you attend the beginners meetings long enough, you will experience the miracle and recover from alcoholism.
During this session, we will take steps 2 and 3, and we will provide you with guidelines for taking the 4th step. During the next week, each newcomer will share his or her inventory with another human being. Several older members have told us the only way to understand the Big Book is to try to explain it to somebody else. They were right. We didn't realize how little we knew about our textbook for recovery until we started leading these sessions. So we want to thank you for providing us the opportunity to learn more about our spiritual program of recovery by once again taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous along with you. As we have learned right here in these beginners' meetings, each time we take the steps, we grow spiritually. Before we begin, we need to make sure that each newcomer has someone here to sponsor them through the steps. In order for this process to work, it is essential that sponsors and newcomers attend the sessions together. Are there any newcomers here for the second session without their sponsors? If so, please stand. Does anybody come in that does not have a sponsor? Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Is there anybody here tonight who didn't have the opportunity to take the first step last week and would like to do so now? If so, would you please stand? Anybody who wants to take the first step but didn't get the chance to do it last time? It's a very simple question. Do you concede to your innermost self that you are alcoholic? Please answer yes or no.
Yes.
Okay. I think we're up to 42 now.
Yeah, something.
Congratulations. Let's give everybody a hand here. On the spiritual path. All right. And according to the Big Book, you have now completed step one. As we explained last week, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous contains step-by-step directions on how to recover from alcoholism by finding a power greater than ourselves. And this power will eliminate our obsession to drink and lead us to a new freedom and a new happiness.
Let's start with a brief review of what we have learned so far. In the last paragraph on page 64 of the Big Book, we find an excellent overview of the recovery process. Starting in the middle of the third line, the Big Book authors write, "For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. This is our goal, to correct the spiritual malady that has separated us from God and has doomed us until now to the living hell of alcoholism. If we are spiritually sick, how do we overcome this malady? The author tells us we need to experience a psychic change, a spiritual awakening. Dr. Silkworth describes the effect of this change on the alcoholic in the first paragraph on Roman numeral page 27. There, Dr. Silkworth writes, "On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that he required to follow a few simple rules. What are the simple rules? They are trust in God and clean house, plus help others. If we follow these guidelines, we will receive the ultimate reward, a spiritual awakening."
Last week, we started on our journey to the spiritual awakening by taking step one. And for some of us, we took it tonight. We conceded to our innermost selves we were powerless over alcohol, that is, we were alcoholics. Those of you who completed step one last week, please stand. Let's see who's already been through. Let's see everybody stand that did the work. It's over half, well over half of the people here. Now you see the problem that they had in the 1940s. Who is going to sponsor all of you people? We've got some volunteers that have, thank you, please be seated, that have done a tremendous job of doubling and tripling up, which is exactly what has happened elsewhere in other areas of the country at other times. And please keep that in mind as you carry the message to the next alcoholics. We need each and every one of you, once you complete these sessions, to sponsor somebody else, because there's still millions out there dying, and we need each and every one of you to carry that message to those who are still suffering. We commend you for admitting you have a problem. As the Big Book says, this is the first step in recovery. Your admission is a major achievement, since most alcoholics live in total denial that they have a drinking problem. Thank you. Now we're ready to proceed. Step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now that we have admitted we are alcoholics, let's look at what we have to do in order to recover. At the bottom of page 44, we learn, "If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how hard we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could wish these things with all our might. But the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. What is it going to take for us to find this higher power? The answer is in the back of the Big Book, within Appendix 2. In paragraph 3 on page 570, we find, "Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable." The Big Book authors tell us it is our arrogance and our short-sightedness which keep us in the darkness and block us from the sunlight of the Spirit.
Bill W., our New York City co-founder, had a great deal of difficulty accepting this spiritual solution to alcoholism. In Bill's story, he describes how he came to believe. In late November 1934, Ebby T. visits Bill at his Brooklyn, New York home. It is during this visit that Bill first learns about a God of his own understanding. Let's pick up the story at the top of page 12. As we mentioned last week, Ebby is one of Bill's high school friends and a former drinking companion. Ebby has been sober in the Oxford group for several months. He tells Bill his life has changed as a result of practicing the Oxford group for spiritual activities. Bill becomes quite distressed when Ebby starts talking about God. However, he does listen because he realizes Ebby's life has changed. He is sober for the first time in many years. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. Then Ebby presents Bill with a revolutionary concept. My friend suggests what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would.
This is how Bill started on his spiritual journey to a God of his own understanding and lasting sobriety. It all began with Bill's willingness to believe in a God of his own understanding. Now let's look at how the Big Book authors describe God. In the middle of page 46, they ask us to set aside our concept of spiritual principles and consider our own concept of God, our contempt for spiritual principles, and consider our own concept of God. You get that right? If we do, we will begin to realize that there just might be some validity to the AA spiritual solution for the alcohol problem. Starting with line 3 in the first paragraph, they write, "We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God." Basically, the Big Book authors tell us is that it is impossible to define God, and we have to stop trying to comprehend God with our mind and start accepting God with our heart. For a chemist like myself, it was hard. I tried to intellectualize my way through this program, and it almost killed me. I had the knowledge, but I didn't have the faith to accept God with my heart for a while. Thank God people stayed with me until something started to gel. On the top of page 47, the Big Book authors write, "When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. Afterward, we find ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was.
Sometimes we have to take our lives right to the brink of disaster and look death squarely in the eye before we are willing to acknowledge the presence of a higher power. But there is hope, even for the most stubborn of us. Starting with the seventh line, down from the top of page 48, the big book authors state that most of us eventually become teachable. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon become as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. I love that line. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. In the third paragraph on page 52, the authors make a powerful case for the existence of God. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the Spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
Once again, we need to make a decision. We have to decide whether or not we believe in a creator, a spirit of the universe, a God of our understanding. In the second paragraph on page 53, the big book authors write, "When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else He is nothing. God either is or He isn't. What was our choice to be? Now it's time to choose. Are we willing to concede that there is a higher power? If we are, we're ready to take step two. If you are hesitant to commit right now, that's fine. It just means you're not ready to proceed with the rest of the program. Please take time during the next week to discuss the concept of a God of your understanding with your sponsor or spiritual advisor. If you are then ready to proceed, have that person take you through the second step." So you can still say no, and during the next week, come to terms with this power, this voice within, and have your sponsor take you through step two, together take step three, and still do the inventory and be right on track. But in the middle of page 47, we find the directions for those who are going to take it today. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Again, how much clearer can it get? It's right here. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Let's see who is ready to proceed. Will the newcomers who have completed step one please stand? All the newcomers. And this is the second step question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Please answer one at a time. And we'll start over here.
Yes.
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 And please be seated after you stand so we can get everybody.
Yes.
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 Yes. And the ladies here in the corner?
Yes.
And over here?
Yes.
And all the way in the back row.
Yes. Yes.
And yes. This man behind the pole, got you there. Let's start over here.
Yes. Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
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 And right here, sir?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And in the back. All the ladies in the back,
45.
In unison,
yes.
45. 45, yes?
Yep.
Congratulations, step two. 45. If this keeps up, we're going to be over 100% recovery rate again. We're breaking the curve here, ladies and gentlemen. It was 108% in Philadelphia, and now we're going for 120% here.
Yeah, we start with.
Where do we put that one in the newsletter?
Miracles do happen.
It's a miracle. Okay, for those who are ready, let's proceed to step three.
All right, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. This step begins just below the middle of page 60. How do we know that? Well, in this case, the big book authors tell us. Being convinced, we were at step three. Convinced of what? If we've taken step two, we were convinced that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Now we need to make a decision to put this power to work. In other words, we have to get out of the way and let God direct our lives. On page 60 through 63, the big book authors discuss self-will and God's will in great detail. At the bottom of page 60, they explain we are all like actors trying to control every detail of a play. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Doesn't that sound just like us? We seem to always be trying to prove to everyone else that they would be better off if they did things our way. That's a bit of self-centeredness, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I sure say so.
Oh boy, I know that too so well.
Yikes. Been there. In the first paragraph on page 62, the authors declare that it is our selfishness and self-centeredness that has gotten us into trouble. We need to take responsibility for our selfishness and ask God to remove this shortcoming from our lives. I know that even after having completed the steps the first time, my sponsor took me right back to this page and told me that I still had not dealt with selfishness and self-centeredness, and to stay on this page until I got it. And 3 months later, I'm still on page 62. I think I've got this page absolutely memorized, word for word. Because it was me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Then at the bottom of page 62, the authors tell us what we have to do in order to rid ourselves of this selfishness. So we get the problem and the solution all in one page. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Since when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So now we know our place in God's universe. Contrary to what we might have thought in the past, the whole universe does not revolve around us.
Imagine that. Jeez.
Once we step aside and put God in the center, we are amazed at how much better our lives become.
By now, we have become aware of the presence of God. Starting with line 5 on page 63, The authors explain this awareness footing. We become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we become conscious of His presence, we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. We have been delivered from the gates of hell, and we have come back to tell what it was like. It isn't a pretty picture. But now we realize we never have to go back there again as long as we don't forget who is in charge. It's decision time once again. The Big Book authors tell us we are now ready to take step 3. Toward the bottom of page 63, they provide us with the directions. We found it very desirable to take the spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional as long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. We are so fortunate that in the years since the Big Book was written, the fellowship has grown to where very few, if any, newcomers have to take the third step alone. We are here tonight to take this monumental step with you.
Although they say the wording is optional, the authors do provide us with a prayer we can use to complete step 3. The prayer is in the middle of page 63. And starting with the second line in the second paragraph, it reads, and I'm going to read it first, and then we're going to read it a second time for those who are ready to take the third step. But the prayer reads, God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. We would like each of you who is ready to take the third step to read the prayer along with us a second time. Now let's read the prayer together. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always.
According to the Big Book authors, we have completed step 3. Even though we've taken a considerable amount of time on the first 3 steps, all we have done is make decisions. Now we are going to take some specific actions that will carry us the rest of the way to God.
Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. At the bottom of page 63, the Big Book authors tell us what we need to do now that we've made our decision to proceed. Next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Please note the authors say at once. This means we take the fourth step immediately after step 3.
Which means we're going to take it right now.
We have to get rid of those things which have been blocking us off from God, or else our initial contact with our Creator won't last. So now we're going to establish a direct line of communication with God by eliminating those aspects of our personalities which have kept us in the dark. The Big Book authors say that liquor is but a symptom. Sure, alcohol has cut us off from God, but once we stop drinking, we're still separated from our Creator because of our character liabilities. Now it's time to look at these shortcomings by making an inventory. The Big Book authors start by comparing a personal inventory to a business inventory. Toward the top of page 64, they write, Therefore, we start upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to dispose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. So we're going to conduct the equivalent of a commercial inventory on our lives. This implies that we're going to look at our assets and liabilities. That's what a commercial inventory is all about, to find out what's working and what's not, to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative. Then the authors tell us exactly what we have to do in order to conduct a four-step inventory. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honesty. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Before we get to the details on how to complete this step, we want to emphasize a few things. It is very important to realize that there is no right or wrong way to do this inventory. Page 65 contains an example, but it is just that, an example. We will use another example, the assets and liabilities checklist described on page 64. This type of inventory has been used for years by Dr. Bob, our Akron, Ohio co-founder, and by many of our older members. Dr. Bob believes that initially newcomers should be taken through the steps in a simplified form. Later on, they can work the program in more detail. This way, the newcomer can easily grasp our life-saving message, experience the miracle of recovery, and grow into the fellowship of the Spirit as he or she works with others. Dr. Bob takes newcomers from the problem of living on self-will into the solution of living on God's will as quickly as possible. In many instances, he has done this during the newcomer's 3 to 5 day stay at St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, Ohio. Thousands of people have recovered from alcoholism with his highly successful Keep It Simple approach. And the Big Book authors confirm what Dr. Bob has been telling us. Take the steps quickly. This comes right from our co-founder. Take the steps quickly. We have discovered the truth about the stock in trade, and we have to do this in order to abolish the behaviors that have cut us off from the spirit of the universe. At the bottom of page 65, the Big Book authors write, "We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully." Interesting paragraph. Please note that the authors ask us to be thorough, and in the very next sentence, they tell us what to do when we're finished. It's not a new paragraph. It's the next sentence. Since it's all in one paragraph, we assume they're asking us to complete this inventory in one sitting. But keep in mind, this is only a suggestion. You can spend as much time on this inventory as you wish, just as long as you complete it and share it with your sponsor or spiritual advisor before our next session. So we give you all kinds of time to do it.
Now let's look at what we put on paper. From pages 64 to 71, the authors provide us with a list of shortcomings we need to eliminate and a list of assets we need to accentuate. On page 64, they ask us to examine our resentments. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. In dealing with resentments, we sent them on paper. We listed people, institution, or principles with whom we were angry. In the first paragraph on page 66, the authors emphasize that our resentments keep us separated from our Creator. We must eliminate them if we are to have a spiritual awakening. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and the growth of a spiritual experience, This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Then the authors instruct us to look at our part in each situation to see if we need to make an amends. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had been entirely our own fault, had not been entirely our own fault, we tried to disregard the person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Let's look at that third sentence again. It reads, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? These behaviors are based on self-will. In addition, they are opposites of the Oxford Group principles of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. The Oxford Group uses these qualities to test a thought or action to determine if it is based on God's will.
Since Bill W., Dr. Bob, and many of the Big Book authors were members of the Oxford Group, they are accustomed to testing what they have written. Now they are asking us to do the same thing, to test our actions. We need to know which path we're on. Are we moving toward the realm of the Spirit, or are we continuing to sink into that bitter morass of self-pity? It is our selfishness and self-centeredness that keep us blocked from our Creator and prevent us from finding the spiritual solution to alcoholism. So we can use either the AA test for self-will or the Oxford Group test for God's will to determine if an amends needs to be made. The AA test for self-will, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and frightened. The Oxford Group test for God's will, unselfishness, honesty, purity, and love. So as part of our inventory, we use the attributes of selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and frightened as a means of separating self-will from God's will. In step 11, we'll learn how to use these same attributes to determine if what we have written during our morning meditation has originated with self or with God. Next, the authors ask us to look at our fears. At the top of page 68, they write, "We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper." Then in the second paragraph on page 68, they inform us that we will lose our fears if we trust our Creator. If we act according to God's will rather than according to self-will, great events will come to pass. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying on God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity.
In the middle of page 69, the authors mention some additional character liabilities we need to address. In addition, they ask us to make a list of those we had harmed. This will become our amends list, the people to whom we need to make restitution. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. The Big Book authors have told us several times now that our inventory needs to be written. So far, so good. But now we need to decide who does the writing. In Bill's story, our New York City co-founder, Bill W., describes how he completed his inventory. On page 13, starting with line 5 in the second paragraph, he states, "I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch." Now, Bill doesn't say, "I ruthlessly wrote down my sins." All he does is acknowledge that he has some faults.
He also
in here has friend with a capital F. That doesn't mean that he is going to have his sponsor, Ebby, remove his sins. He's going to have God, capital F, friend, remove his sins.
His newfound friend.
His newfound friend.
Right. Okay. In the third paragraph on page 13, Bill describes how he shared his inventory with his sponsor. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. Here again, Bill doesn't say, my schoolmate visited me, and I read him my inventory of resentments and fears. He also doesn't say, I made a list of people. Rather, Bill writes, we made a list of people. So together, Bill and Ebby made an amends list. Let's think about this for a minute. Bill is in Towns Hospital in December 1934, being withdrawn for alcohol for the third time that year. He is suffering from delirium tremens. He's a very sick man. Ebby has been sober for several months. Whom do you think did the writing?
I don't think it was Bill.
No, I don't know.
I think that's why I wrote we. And that's how we're going to do it. We are going to make a list. When making an inventory, we found it helpful to use an assets and liabilities checklist. There are several lists in use today. One can be found in the Washington, D.C. pamphlet we discussed last week. Another list has been published in the August 1946 AA Grapevine. A third list is in a book distributed by a Minneapolis, Minnesota group titled An Interpretation of the 12 Steps of the Alcoholics Anonymous Program. You can use any one or all of these checklists. We're going to discuss the one from the Washington, D.C. pamphlet in detail. Hopefully our explanation of this checklist will make it easier for you to complete your inventory. The Washington, D.C. pamphlet contains specific instructions for taking a fourth step inventory. This is from the Washington, D.C. pamphlet. Some in error think the inventory is a lot of unpaid debts plus a lot of unmade apologies. Our trouble goes much deeper. We will find the root of our trouble lies in resentments, false pride, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and many other things. Laziness is an important one. In other words, we are making an inventory of our character, our attitude towards others, our very way of living. The character liabilities mentioned in the Washington, D.C. pamphlet are resentments, false pride, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and laziness. And to these we've added dishonesty and fear from the AA test for self-will found on page 67 of the Big Book. And this is how they describe it when they do the beginner's meetings in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They've actually taken the character liabilities and put them on the outside of some whiskey bottles so that you'll know that if you can get rid of these defects, you'll never have to drink what's inside these bottles ever again. And I think it's a classic way of visualizing. And again, each group is autonomous. And I think it's uncanny some of the things that people have come up with in the various groups around the country to emphasize the points that are being made here. And we have the Minneapolis, Minnesota group to thank for this.
Seems appropriate.
Yep.
So much for the liability side of the ledger. Now, what about the assets? The author lists assets through Chapter 5, starting with line 3 at the top of page 67. They described how we should react to those who have wronged us. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." At the bottom of page 70, they provided us with several more assets while summarizing the inventory process. Starting with line 2 in the third paragraph, they write, "We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see the terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies." Additional assets, also listed in the Washington, D.C. pamphlet and the AA Grapevine article. Some of these are forgiveness, purity, humility, contentment, trust, generosity, unselfishness, activity, industry, honesty, and faith, which is love. We have now looked at both sides of the ledger. Our inventory consists of a list of liabilities to watch for and a list of assets to strive for.
To show you how easy it is to do a four-step inventory, we're going to provide you with an example. In this example, we'll assume the sponsor does the writing. Okay, let's begin. The sponsor starts at the top of the checklist. He or she writes down some of the people, institutions, and principles that a newcomer usually has to inventory. And this is just to get started, right down at the top. Parents, spouses, children, siblings, friends, relatives, bosses, employees, police officers, military personnel, government officials, lawyers, prisons, sanitariums, God, religion, etc. The sponsor writes down others as they come up during the session. So the sponsor starts off with a couple of the universal ones, and then more is filled in later. The sponsor asks the newcomer to look over the list and to put check marks next to the character liabilities that apply. If the newcomer isn't able to do this, the sponsor starts asking questions, filling in the checklist as he or she goes along. The sponsor opens the sharing session with something like, let's look at your parents. Do you resent your mother? If the newcomer answers yes, the sponsor puts a check mark next to the word resentment. The sponsor proceeds down the list of liabilities asking, have you done anything to make yourself look good at her expense? Have you been envious of her? Are you jealous of her? Have you been selfish towards her? Are you lazy around her? And have you been dishonest? Are you afraid of her? Based on what the newcomer shares, the sponsor makes the appropriate check marks. Then the sponsor asks the newcomer to describe the incidences surrounding the check marks. Together, they decide if an amends or some restitution needs to be made. For example, the sponsor and the newcomer decide that the newcomer needs to make an amends to his mother for being selfish and lazy. The sponsor circles the check marks next to selfishness and laziness. The sponsor and the newcomer proceed across the checklist, discussing the people, institutions, and principles that apply. The sponsor makes check marks and circles until the newcomer has described many of his or her grosser handicaps. Then they look at the assets side of the ledger. The assets that are opposite the liabilities with the least check marks are the positive characteristics that the newcomer already has. Those assets that are opposite the liabilities with the most check marks are the personal qualities that will be strengthened as the newcomer makes the necessary amends. In our example, the sponsor and the newcomer have put together a list with only a few check marks next to jealousy, laziness, and dishonesty, and numerous check marks next to resentments and selfishness. The sponsor now says something like, this inventory shows that for the most part you are an honest, hardworking, and trusting person. You'll also become more forgiving and more generous as you make the amends for your resentments and selfishness.
The author tells us, we look at assets as well as liabilities because many of us have lost much of our self-esteem and self-worth as a result of our alcoholism. Even though we've done some very foolish and destructive things while drinking, we will never have to repeat those actions again if we are willing to admit our faults and try to correct them. If we are genuinely sorry, God has already forgiven us. Now it is time to forgive ourselves. The authors tell us this at the top of page 70, starting with line 4 in the first paragraph, they write, if we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. That's powerful. So it is time to make a searching and fearless moral inventory. Time to clean up the wreckage of the past so we can get closer to the spirit of the universe. We have copies of the assets and liabilities checklist for anyone who would like to use this format for their fourth step, inventory. We have completed our discussion of step 4, but before we end this session, we need to discuss one more detail, the person with whom we share our inventory. The fifth step reads, admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Therefore, we must talk to you. We must talk over your inventory with someone else. That person can be a member of AA who is sponsoring you through these sessions, but it doesn't have to be. The Big Book authors provide us with other options. On the bottom of page 73, they provide directions on how to choose the person with whom we share our inventory. Please keep in mind that the Big Book was written before any type of formalized sponsorship had been established. The authors do not use the word sponsor anywhere in the text of the book. However, they do give us some guidelines regarding the person with whom we review our assets and liabilities. We must entirely be honest with somebody if we expect to live long and happily in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate and confidential step. Those of us who belong to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority, whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. If we cannot or would rather not do this, we search our acquaintance for a close-mouthed, understanding friend. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. Therefore, you can share your inventory with any number of people. For those who are still uncertain with who that person should be, have your sponsor help you decide.
If any of you have doubts about the value of the fourth step, let us read to you what the Big Book authors have to say. At the bottom of page 70, they make it clear that God will take away all our difficulties if we let Him. Bottom of page 70. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. So please let God guide you through the inventory process. If you do, we'll find the fourth and fifth steps simple and straightforward. Just take the time to complete one of the checklists, either by yourself or with your sponsor or spiritual advisor, then share your list with another person. As we have already said, there is no right or wrong way to do the fourth step. Just do it. Are there any questions?